Ray is in Sutton Coldfield. Hi, Ray.
Yeah, good evening, Chris. First of all, can I just congratulate you, Cleve, and the rest of the team for an absolutely excellent and unique programme.
Can I just say I didn't pay him to say that? Okay.
No, I actually listened to your programmes via podcast. I just wish that the BBC in their wisdom would transmit your programme to the rest of the country.
Because maybe then they'd pay me a bit more as well, so that would be nice, wouldn't it?
That would be very good, yeah. Anyway, my question tonight is actually regarding communications, and it's about geostationary communication-type satellites. And the question is this. When one of the various space agencies launches a geostationary satellite and places it into orbit, could you tell me, first of all, approximately what height they are above the Earth's surface? And how do they set the satellite's velocity so that it maintains a geostationary position? And how do they stop them from drifting over the course of time?
OK, well, the first bit of the question, the height that they actually go up to is about 22,300 miles. So that's about the height that they send these rockets to. Now, how they get there is basically they stick the stuff on the top of a rocket, they launch the rocket at, you know, quite incredibly high velocities, to be honest, sort of kilometres per second when they get to the top, or kilometres per... Well, anyway, hugely high speeds anyway when they get to the top of the atmosphere. And basically, it's all a case of computer control. We've now been doing this for a number of decades, firing these rockets up into orbit. And it's all basically been practice, computer control to get the fine detail right. What they also often do is they launch these things, they get them in roughly the right orbit, they sort of watch them for a while, monitor them to make sure that they're close, and then they actually use smaller thrusters on this spacecraft itself to sort of manoeuvre it into exactly the right orbit. And obviously, like you say, these things can drift and they can move, and that's caused by the influence of the moon, possibly. Or also, the Earth is not an exact sphere. That can also be, because it's a funny shape, that can also cause things to wobble around a bit. And basically, all they do is they use these small thrusters and keep monitoring these satellites to actually keep them in exactly the right orbit and keep them just where they're supposed to be.
I suppose the bottom line on this, Phil, is that what we're talking about with geostationary satellite is something which is over one point on the Earth's surface at all times, so you can always see the satellite. Because if it goes at the same speed of rotation as the Earth, in terms of angular rotation, it's always going to stay in the same place in space relative to that bit of the Earth.
Absolutely true. So you'd find them directly above the equator. You only get them above the equator. And they just sit directly above a point. And they use them for telecommunications often. If you've got satellite TV at home, it's a geostationary satellite that's used for your satellite TV.
Because I was looking at, because obviously at the equator, the Earth is about 24,000 miles around. That it takes 24 hours to do one complete revolution of the Earth, therefore the Earth's running at the equator at about 1,000 miles an hour. Therefore a satellite out in space is much further away, it's got to go a lot quicker. Satellites in space at that kind of orbit are doing something in the order of 8,000 miles an hour to cover the distance, which is pretty damn fast,
isn't it? It's incredibly fast, yeah, absolutely. And that's why we use such huge rockets to launch these things.
But the other point is that bit of space that Ray's talking about, there aren't that many vacancies up there, are there? Because it's one distance from the Earth, and therefore you just have one orbit, which is at that point from the Earth, so it's getting pretty crowded.
Absolutely, and this can be a problem, and not only for that orbit, but for other Earth orbits where we use satellites and things. And we've seen that recently with the Chinese satellite that's been destroyed. They use that basically to demonstrate their satellite destroying technology. And, you know, it's created a lot of debris in orbit, and this debris is now actually starting to go on to actually smash into other satellites and damage and destroy other satellites, so it's actually quite a problem.
I wonder how you insure for that. So is there an insurance company that insures satellites then, Phil?
I have no idea. I don't think I'd like to be the
chance that China blows up a satellite.
I don't think I'd like to be that insurance company now, though, if I'm perfectly honest.
Does that cover that one for you, Ray?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thanks, Chris.
Quick go at the quiz.
Go on then, put me on the spot.
A chocolate causes spots and acne. Do you think that's science fact or science fiction?
I think that's fact.
Apparently, apparently not. Several trials, including one on medical students, have failed to find any link between chocolate and acne and the amount of spots they develop.
Oh,
okay, you've got to get this one right to stay in the game, Ray, okay?
Okay.
The pitch of a fire engine or a police car siren gets lower as it comes towards you and then gets higher as it goes away again. Science fact or science fiction?
It's the other way around.
Yeah, that's right. When the car approaches or the siren approaches, all the waves get bunched together so they vibrate faster, it gets higher, and as it goes further away they get stretched out and so they vibrate more slowly and the pitch gets lower.
Ray, thanks. It's been great having you on the programme. One out of two.
Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks.
That was Ray in Sutton Coldfield. If you have any questions for us, it's our science question and answer show this week. Email me, chris@nakedscientist.com. Waiting in the wings, Richard Van Norden from Chemistry World is going to give us all the fun and funky latest news from the world of chemistry, including why tomatoes used to taste like cucumbers. And we'll also be answering some more of your science questions.